and welcome to News 24 on Air. I am Karen Morn, and today I have the pleasure of being joined by Mbekezeli Benjamin from Judges Matter, a pivotal organization in our society that since 2009 has been part of the monitoring of the Judicial Service Commission interview process that results in judges being appointed to our high courts, to the Supreme Court of Appeal, to the Constitutional Court, and actually a suitable Chief Justice candidate being selected. Now, Mbekezeli, you and I have discussed this before. Why, you know, when people turn around and say South Africa's got so many problems, why focus on the judiciary? Why is it so important to monitor what's happening in that environment? What do you say to them?
Well, first of all, the judiciary is such an important institution when it comes to the constitutional democracy in South Africa, but also in most people's lives. For most people, when, for example, they get in contact with the law, they would want those decisions to be made by fair, independent people who will look at the law and come to a fair conclusion. Mm. Say, for example, you are ever accused of a crime, you'd much rather be in front of a highly trained and independent judicial officer than you would put your faith in a mob, for example. Or if you are a small business and you're owed money, one of the most effective ways to get your money back is through using the judicial process. And that goes for child maintenance cases, for children who need care and protection. Judicial officers come in there. And in many other aspects, in broader constitutional issues, like who holds the power in our society and how do you hold them accountable, the judiciary is a key institution for doing that.
Well, speaking as someone who has had my fate determined by judges, I absolutely recognize what you're saying, because one hopes that you're never in a situation where you believe that your rights are being compromised and you have to turn to the courts. But when that does happen, you need to know, to have that confidence that the decision is going to be fair and it's not going to be influenced by political language and the kind of discourse that has become so prevalent in our political spaces. Why is it important, do you believe, for people to, when they criticize the judiciary, do so on a substantiated and specific basis?
Well, number one, the judiciary relies on its reputation to carry out its function. Unlike the executive, for example, or the government, to enforce their will, they can use the police, they can use the army, they control the money, they have all this power. The one power that the judiciary has is its reputation and its integrity. Mm. And so when there are unsubstantiated attacks or comments or criticisms against the courts or the judiciary, right, they undermine the respect that ordinary people have in the courts. And once we get to a situation where the judiciary is completely undermined, then whatever orders it makes will not mean anything, because really we will fall into the law of the jungle. Whoever has the biggest fist or whoever has the most powerful arms will be the one who calls the shots. And that's not the kind of society that we want for ourselves or for future generations.
No, certainly not. Now, Judges Matter you have certainly come out in the line of fire for attack by coming forward and in the strongest possible terms condemning the utterances made by EFF leader Julius Malema in relation to Magistrate Toinette Olivier. Of course, we know he applied for a Section 174 discharge, which is when an accused person seeks a summary acquittal on the basis that the state has not laid sufficient evidence to justify a response from them. She refuses it, and then he goes out and makes a number of accusations against her. He has tried to frame this as a genuine and appropriate critique. You say absolutely not. What were his accusations, and why has Judges Matter and, you know, joined by the Justice Department, condemned them?
Well, look, he has sort of a point to say he was not happy with how the magistrates behaved. He accused the magistrates of coming late to court. He accused the magistrates of being disorganized, because on one of the occasions, the magistrate had forgotten the notes back in her office and needed to send someone to get those notes before the judgment could start. There was a point at which the proceedings stopped and they had to restart again because there was a phone call that the magistrate needed to make. So all of those criticisms are, I would say they are fair, right? Because they are based on someone who is in court and this is what they're observing and they are frustrated with what they are seeing. We ourselves criticize judicial officers all the time because we want them to hold them to the highest possible standards of professionalism. So that kind of criticism based on substantiated issues is perfectly fine. But where he went overboard and where we are saying he should retract his comment is when he says the magistrate was receiving phone calls from politicians, that the magistrate was doing the bidding of politicians. She's corrupt. She is delivering a sponsored judgment. He didn't provide any shred of evidence to support any of those claims. And that's where we say it's not fair criticism. It's not criticism that is trying to build or hold the judiciary accountable. It really is the kind of criticism that is meant to intimidate, that is meant to attack, and that is meant to undermine the independence of the judicial officer. Because what will follow now is that the same magistrate still needs to preside over this case. And so she will always have it in the back of her mind that if I ever say something or ask any question of in relation to this case, those kinds of questions will be seen as part of a campaign of me being corrupt or sort of being against this particular person. And that's not how things should be. We should all have faith in judicial officers. When they do wrong, we should criticize them fairly so. But when your criticism is completely unsubstantiated, then you're doing completely something unacceptable that should not ever be tolerated in a constitutional democracy.
Absolutely. And I mean, the interesting thing is we have seen, you know, previous matters where courts have pursued charges of, for instance, scandalizing the court. You know, there was that matter in the SCA. And also, of course, with you know, now Chief Justice Raymond Zondo laying contempt cards, you know, charges against the former president over the walking when he walked out of the State Capture Commission. You know, what are the legal mechanisms available? And, you know, do you believe that there should be some kind of contempt or scandalizing the court charge that is pursued against Mr. Malema over this?
Look, on principle, we should be wary of using legal mechanisms to control what people say or what people cannot say, right? Because the idea of freedom of expression and the right to freedom of expression is so vital that you wouldn't want to interfere in any way. And so that is why, even with how we approach this issue, we have asked Mr. Malema to first apologize and retract. We've gone to some length to show how his comments are damaging. His comments have a wider impact than just him saying whatever he feels. We have tried to persuade him to say, look, in terms of your constitutional responsibilities, you are expected to behave in a certain way as a member of parliament, as a leader in society, and particularly as a member of the Judicial Service Commission. And on principle, we do believe engagement is the way to go. But of course, if someone, even after being engaged, being educated, being persuaded, they still refuse to acknowledge that they have made a mistake, then they should be held accountable. And one of those mechanisms is to file contempt charges against the person, which would, in this case, be specifically scandalizing the court, because that is essentially what he did by saying that the magistrate was delivering a sponsored judgment. Then that is essentially scandalizing the court, and it is a crime that is recognized in the law. And that is quite a harsh stance, which we really, really hope to never, ever get to. We still have faith that he will come around and that he will be persuaded to see the damage that his comments have made, and he will try to apologize. But yes, one of those options is the criminal route, but there could also be the parliamentary route, because as a member of parliament, the code of ethics for members of parliament applies to him, and so he would there could possibly be a complaint filed with the ethics committee in parliament. So those are all options on the table. But of course, our default is that we should allow free expression and the contestation of ideas. And in this situation, we have appealed to him. We have tried to educate him and showed him the mistake that he has committed by those comments.
Mbeki Zeli, a lot of people would look at Mr. Malema's history when it comes to the JSE and his attacks on the judges and say your hopes of a retraction and apology are very ill-founded, given his history. I mean, this is the same individual who accused the two female judges who ruled in favor of Pravin Gordhan and the President Ramaphosa in those challenges to the public protectors' reports on them in the CR17 and SARS rogue unit matters, and accused them of being controlled by male politicians. You know, he was faced an inquiry or faced charges by accusations by CASAC that he had been acted inappropriately towards Judge Daya Pillay, who he accused of being, I think, a political activist in his questioning. Of course, we know Parliament's Ethics Committee did not investigate that. He also, despite the fact that the EFF and their lawyers had full access to the records in the CR17 matter and knew full well, though those records were not disclosed because they were obviously sealed, so therefore not available to the public but available to all the parties, insisted on saying in Parliament, using his parliamentary privilege, that, you know, there were judges on the payroll of Cyril Ramaphosa. None of these accusations he has ever retracted. And of course, we know at the moment he is fighting a Parliamentary Ethics Committee finding and recommendation that he apologized to Judge Elias Matojane and the JSC for questioning him about a judgment he gave in a defamation matter against the EFF over the 500,000 rand that he awarded to Trevor Manuel. And he's refused to apologize. So there is this pathology of making wholly unsubstantiated accusations, often with a very misogynistic bent to them, making unfounded accusations, democracy-disrupting accusations of corruption against judges without a shred of evidence. And then when he is asked or compelled by Parliament, who he is actually representing in the JSE, simply refusing to apologize. So some would say, you know, your hope of getting a responsible response from him may be somewhat misconceived.
Well, that would be look, that would be a fair comment looking at the track record, right? Mm. But at the same time, though, we have to recognize that a democracy is a difficult thing to maintain. It's not the easiest or the cleanest way of governing ourselves, but we have to keep our commitment to it, and we have to keep our commitment to promoting an open and robust democracy. And that's why I said the criminal route is an option that is on the table. Mm-hmm. But the default should not be the criminal route, because what it will end up doing is that it will normalize what should really be one of those things that happen in the most rare of circumstances. In the worst possible cases, we should be following the criminal route. What should ideally happen now is, like I said, persuasion. That's the default, that we should be debating robustly, calling each other out when we need to, showing each other the mistakes that we've made, and reminding each other of our constitutional responsibilities. That is how, on principle, things should go. But of course, there is the next step, and which is something you highlighted now, that there's already a process in Parliament which is not as harsh as the criminal route, but it does have some bite, which is the ethics complaint in Parliament. Mm-hmm. That process has never really been tested to its full extent, which is why we're paying attention to the litigation around the enforcement mechanism of the ethics process in Parliament, because that is a woefully underutilized system, and it should be stronger, should have more teeth. But failing that, the criminal route still remains as an option. But I hope you understand why we are reluctant to jump to the criminal route because it has wider consequences. Mm. It sets a precedent for other people. We might very well find that in future there'll be people on the other side of Mr. Malema who, and let's assume Mr. Malema one day becomes president, he would want to use those same criminal sanctions against those people, which will be very hard to sort of push back. So you don't want to set precedents that you might later regret. We do want to say it's still an option for him to apologize. However, there are other options, including the parliamentary process and ultimately the criminal process. We're not ruling it out completely, but we're saying we are very slow to reach that point.
It brings to an interesting point because while you are, you know, assuming the best and saying, look, I believe like rationally if we debate this and point out to him that it's inappropriate, he will see the errors of his ways. We know what happened when Judges Matter put out that statement, and we know the kind of vociferous personal attacks you personally faced. And I think one of the great tragedies of our current environment is that whenever there is a mechanism to try and seek accountability from certain political leaders, specifically in the populist space, as has been so well articulated by Dan Mafora in his recent book, there's this very vitriolic, personal, insult first, abuse first, ask questions later kind of response. And I think that is what's so unfortunate, is that while you are coming with a very kind of calm, cool, collected explanation for why this isn't appropriate, even you pointing that out in that way, in a very sort of non-agitated manner, has seen you personally and Judges Matter facing anti-Semitic accusations of being controlled, and you personally being controlled by sort of shadowy, quote-unquote, white forces. You know, how do you process that? And is there a sense of sadness that in a constitutional democracy, we can't debate these things without being slathered with this kind of insult rhetoric that really doesn't take us forward in any way?
Yeah, I think that is one of the great tragedies of our current political moment and the state of our body politic and our political discourse generally, that we hardly ever take time to listen carefully, to understand people's approaches and disagree when we need to, and even disagree forcefully and robustly, but focusing on a person's content and the kind of points that they made and not necessarily who the person is. And and that is an unfortunate development. But at the same time, though, we still need to keep a sort of a rational line. We need to hold ourselves to higher standards, right? We can't descend to a bottomless pit where we all try to outdo each other to see what would be the worst of the worst that will come out of us. You have faced terrible, horrible attacks. But in all of that, you've never been dissuaded in the work that you do. Similarly, with Dan, part of the reason why he wrote a book to point out some of what is happening on social media and the vitriolic attacks that happen there is to show that this is an abnormal situation. We should really be aiming for much higher, especially if we want to keep a constitutional democracy, which is still an experiment, right? We're still figuring things out. And so it won't always be clean. There will be some messiness to it. And so we do need to keep that commitment to an open democracy with vibrant ideas where you would be able to call out someone and they might not agree with you. They might, at least initially, right? We sort of put out the statement condemning those attacks because we were sort of fed up at some point that this is going on and this is unchecked. Right now it has provoked a response, which means people are thinking about it. They're just sorting it off and ignoring it. The next step now is that people will say, okay, actually, this is the right way to go, and they will see the error of their ways. And like I said, one of the options and the last remaining option really should be the criminal route. But that in normal circumstances, it shouldn't be that every time we want to resolve things in the public space, we resort to criminal means or legal means. And that shuts down a space that really should be protected, because the people who can access those legal means might today be people that we like, but tomorrow it might be people that we don't like, and we don't want to give them that power. That the only you only need to pay powerful lawyers for you to win an argument in a democracy. That's not normal either.
Well, I mean, I do have faith in rule of law, and I do have faith that the courts. But I understand your reluctance about, you know, dragging it to court again may actually just perpetuate the problem and potentially serve as a form of martyrdom and victimhood, which is such a popular stance within the populist rhetoric. But my question is also different as well. I mean, Mr. Malema served on the JSE for 9 years. All of that time he's, you know, embarked on a lot of quite problematic conduct, one of which is now, you know, resulted in him being found guilty of, you know, abusing public trust that was placed in him as a JSE commissioner. What do you say to people, you know, who think potentially that he should not be on the JSE if he has such apparent scant regard for a basic respect and understanding for rule of law and a need for deference and respect to be shown to the judiciary, even when you don't agree with them?
Well, look, that's an important question, and it actually is a fundamental question to why we actually have a body like the JSC, which is quite unique, actually, in any other body in our democracy, which has lawyers on one side, judges on the other, and members of parliament on the other side. That space is meant to be robust. It's meant to be quite open to different persuasion, different influences. Each member of the JSC sits there, yes, in a representative capacity, but they all carry a constitutional obligation as a member of the JSC.
Yes.
And over the last couple of years, yes, the JSC as a collective, and particularly Mr. Malema and a few others, they have not held themselves to those high standards that are required of them in the Constitution. And yes, we might ask whether it's useful to keep them in that body. But in those 9 years, at the same time, and refer to him, my assessment is that he has made some really important interventions in terms of the kind of questions that are asked in that room. He does have sometimes a forceful nature in asking those questions. But if he was to be removed and his inputs are totally removed, I think the JSC would be a little bit poorer. I do see that he has some value in the JSC. And so what I would prefer to do is to ask him and hold him to a higher standard. And over the last couple of months, especially the last 6 to 12 months, there has been a marked change in the JSC. If
yes,
I compare
absolutely.
The performance at the April 2023 session of the JSC, and even the October 2023 session of the JSC, even though he had very little contribution to make, but he himself has changed, and that's the kind of thing that we want. You can't keep playing this, you know, that game called hit a mold, where people who show up and do the worst things and then you bash them and say, get out, get out, get out. Because at the end, people are reluctant to sort of start digging in their heels, and that will be really bad for institutions like the JSC, which are meant to be broadly representative of different constituencies in society. And we should try to keep that space open. You know, I think the recurring theme that you see is we need to keep democratic and constitutional spaces open. We should try as much as possible to hold people accountable, yes, but we shouldn't be rush to eliminate people and write them off. And that's the same approach, I think, that should follow in the JSC when it comes to Mr. Malema.
And I mean,
other commissioners too, for example. He's not the only one.
You've also, you know, I think Judges Matter and a number of other groups have really said we need a code of conduct for commissioners. And we know one of the big issues that's coming about in the Matajane litigation is Mr. Malema's argument that Parliament cannot hold him accountable according to the Executive Ethics Code for, you know, the Ethics Code in Parliament, because he's there, you know, in a different capacity. It's only the JSC. And obviously this case is going to be very pivotal to establishing the merits of that argument. But essentially what you're saying is that, you know, there's this hope that at this particular moment that we can ask people in the interest of democracy, in the interest of constitutional democracy, to behave in a way that signals a respect for the enormity of this task, and a sense of we are choosing the judges that will, you know, define our courts, our hearings, etc. Let's do the absolute best possible job, and let's not, as the Ethics Committee found in that Matajane matter, be led by self-interested politics. And that's really what I'm getting from you, is that you don't want to say, like, let's not just write Julius Malema off. Let's expect better of him and ask him to be better.
Yes, absolutely. Because, look, the reason why we want to appeal to the better senses of people, and we want people to behave, is because you can have the best rules, right, on paper. We could have a code of conduct for the JSC commissioners today.
Mm.
But if we don't hold everyone to account and hold them to those standards, we will have a worse person tomorrow. They will use those mechanisms cynically to sort of run down the process, because they know that you always will try to do the worst of the worst of the worst, and they'll always want to test the limits of how far they can go. So there is the bigger risk. And it's something that we actually see across the world. When we look at democracy, there's something called democratic backsliding, and even then there's something called autocratic legalism, where autocrats are now using the same legal means that have been used for progressive change. They are using those legal means to sort of subvert democracy, to frustrate democratic processes. They can't be held accountable, because they're saying we are using the same rules that everyone has used, but they're using them cynically. And mm-hmm. that is part of the reason why we keep appealing to the JSC, and over the last couple of years, finally we're seeing some change happening there. But part of it is to say, look, the flaw in your process is that you don't have a code of conduct for commissioners. So you need to have written rules and hold people to those rules. You can't simply jump and say, we need to kick you out, because what will happen is that this person that today we don't like, tomorrow there will be a person that we like, and that same person will say, no, you can't kick me out, because, I mean, you want to kick me out, but you don't have any rules to show that I need to be kicked out. So that's why the default is that you need to have clear rules, you need to hold people to higher standards, and appeal that they hold that line, that they need to be grown-ups when they carry out important responsibilities like in the JSC.
I think that needs to be the slogan for the JSC going forward. We need to be grown-ups. Mbeki Zeli Benjamin, thank you so much. And I really appreciate your time and your insight. And I just remind listeners that, you know, Mbeki Zeli personally experienced a huge amount of backlash as regards Judges Matters statements on the Malema attacks on the magistrate. And the fact that he has retained his sort of even-handedness, I think, is a massive credit to your character. And I appreciate your conversation and your carefully thought-out responses. And I hope you have a good day going forward.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure.